Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Views on View. I am your host, Lindsay Wardell. Here with me today is Steve Edwards.
Hello from Portland.
Yeah, it's actually sunny here. It's weird.
It is. It's cold, but it's sunny.
Yeah.
It's not colder because it's sunny.
Yes. The special guest today is Daniel Kelly. Welcome, Daniel.
Hey, Lindsay. Thank you.
Whether you're working on a personal project or managing enterprise infrastructure, you deserve simple, affordable, and accessible cloud computing solutions that will allow you to take your project to the next level. Simplify your cloud's infrastructure with Linode's Linux virtual machines and develop, deploy, and scale your modern applications faster and easier. Get started on Linode today with $100 in free credits for listeners of Ruby Rogues. You can find the details at linode.com/rubyrogues. That's Ruby Rogues, all one word. Linode has 11 global data centers and provides 24/7, 365 human support with no tiers or handoffs, regardless of your plan size. In addition to shared and dedicated compute instances, you can use your $100 in credit on S3 compatible object storage, managed Kubernetes, and more. Visit linode.com/rubyrogues and click on the Create Free Account button to get started.
Yeah, Daniel, would you mind introducing yourself for those who aren't aware of how awesome you are?
Yeah, my name's Daniel Kelly, and I really invited onto this show because of a open source template that I made with Nuxt.js and Netlify CMS, and released that about a year ago under the name Awake. And yeah, I really enjoyed working with Nuxt and Vue in that project. A little bit about my experience during my daytime job. I work with Laravel on the back end, and I work with Vue on the front end, so I don't actually get to use Nuxt at work, but I was introduced to Vue actually at Laracon 2016, I believe. I remember on the plane ride over there in the airport talking to somebody who was also going to VueConf, and they were talking about these reactive JavaScript frameworks, and I was like, dude, I have no idea what you're even talking about. You know, and heard about Vue there, and I really fell in love with it ever since. It's been a much refreshing step over just, you know, jQuery and querying the DOM for everything. It's been great.
Nice. What got you into programming in general?
Sure. Well, I graduated with a degree in graphic design, and I was wanting to put up an online portfolio, you know, of some of my work, and I didn't want some templated thing. I'm a designer, right? So I got into code a little bit, worked with WordPress some, learned PHP and HTML and CSS that way, and eventually got a job where I work now at Randall Riley, and worked a lot in WordPress and even just some vanilla, you know, JavaScript and PHP and HTML, and then was introduced to Laravel soon after that. And so yeah, that's kind of where brought me to where I am now.
Very cool. Since you work with both PHP and JavaScript on a regular basis, do you have a preference in which one you like to work with?
Absolutely. I enjoy JavaScript more just because I think it's more versatile. You know, I think the more I can dive into JavaScript, the more different, more context I can take my work to, right? Like I can use JavaScript to build Internet of Things, you know, kind of applications, or I can use it to build a website or even, you know, mobile apps. It's just so versatile. There are some safety things, like some cushions in PHP that I like, that I'm just more used to because I do have more experience with it, but it's not as versatile language. So anytime I can use JavaScript, I really prefer that. Of course, if they could just like port Laravel over to JavaScript, I'd be a pretty happy person too. Because Laravel is a lot of fun to work with, for sure.
Yeah, I haven't gotten a lot of experience with Laravel yet. I keep meaning to. I started my programming journey with PHP.
Okay.
And I just haven't found the reason to dive into Laravel. It looks amazing to work with.
The concept of models is really, really simple to work with. And in fact, in several of the projects I'm working on at work right now, I've kind of ported that same idea of models over to the JavaScript side of things, and I've really enjoyed working that way. So for instance, if there is a, you know, let's talk in blog terms, perhaps, if there's a, you know, a post in the database, you have a post table, and then in Laravel, you would have a post model. What I like to do is actually, I have a base model in my JavaScript code, and then I can create models off of that base model, such as a post. And then in order to save a post from JavaScript, what I would do is I would, you know, type something like post save, and under the hood that just makes an Ajax call. And so it really kind of cleans up my code. I don't have Ajax calls littered all over the place, and I have something that's a little bit more semantic to read, and it's really pretty nice. I was just going to say that concept of models has really been worked well for me.
So that's eloquent. Am I correct?
That's correct.
That's eloquent, yes. So to me, it reminds me of Mongoose and Node.js, sort of the same idea where you're modeling your database.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar? Have you worked with Mongoose or Node?
I haven't worked with Mongoose, no.
Okay, so yeah, I did. The extent of my experience with that is a book I went through on the Mean Stack years ago and doing Mongo University's Mongo for Node Developers course a few years ago, but it sounds like the same thing. So it's seems like a common paradigm, at least for connecting to your database and modeling your data.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the kind of slightly different thing about this approach is like the models on the PHP side, that's exactly what it's doing. It's just, you know, modeling the database on the JavaScript side and really reflecting what PHP is doing, but it's not about interacting with the database per se, but it's interacting with the HTTP API. So that the PHP still has to be set up to kind of accept, you know, what the JavaScript is sending. But as long as it's set up, you know, in a standard way for all your different resources, for all your different models or whatever, it works pretty good.
So now what kind of, what database are you using for your data store on the back end?
We use MySQL. Well, I think it's actually MariaDB, but yeah.
It's SQL, yeah. Okay, as compared to a document database or, you know, a NoSQL like Mongo.
That's correct. Yeah. The Nux template, the Awake template, doesn't use any database at all. It is purely static files.
Okay. Let's dive into the Awake template. So for those who have not seen the VueConf talk back in March, there is a talk and there will be a link in the show notes. You should go watch it. But would you mind describing what the Awake template is and kind of what inspired you to create that?
Sure. The Awake template is it's a template for a statically generated site. So your end site is static files. It's just flat HTML files. And it's built in Nuxt.js. And what inspired me to create that was actually at VueConf, I guess in 2019, I heard a talk on Nuxt.js, I believe from, you know, one of the Nuxt.js core team members. I don't remember who it was, but I was really inspired by the workflow there because I'm already so comfortable with Vue, but then being able to kind of it provide a framework for the entire application was really intriguing to me. And so as I mentioned earlier, you know, PHP is kind of my server side forte there, and I don't have a lot of experience with Node.js on the server side. And so I decided to play with Nuxt as a static site generator, and turned out to work really well with both Netlify CMS and Netlify's hosting platform, which probably a lot of people are familiar with. So I can write in the code that I'm comfortable with, that is Vue. I can write in Vue, and then with a push to my GitHub repo, I can, you know, have Netlify automatically deploy my site. And then with Netlify CMS, I don't even have to be a technical user. I can have a, you know, pretty dashboard kind of thing that a lot of people are used to using in the browser itself to push new content to my repo, and Netlify will automatically rebuild my site. And yeah, it works great.
So to get started with this, it looks like I'm looking at your GitHub repo. So it's basically a whole Nuxt site. It's not just like a theme. So basically you would clone this and run your NPM install and in theory have a full site up and running. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Brilliant. Sorry, that's my famous favorite Guinness commercial. So then I'm assuming, I noticed you had a monster commit here called long needed updates about 8 months ago. That so looks like you just keep it updated. I'm assuming you keep it updated with current versions of Vue and some of the other dependencies. Or is that incumbent upon the owner once it's downloaded?
That's mostly up to the owner. I've made a few updates to it since its inception, and there's been several pull requests and feature adds since I put it out. I really would like to update it eventually to use the Nuxt content module, because that module is just excellent and provides a lot of things out of the box that I kind of had to do manually with this Awake template. But the content module, I would eventually like to add that in just because it does a lot of things under the hood that you don't have to think about.
So you have some stuff under content categories and posts. You're not using the Nuxt content to do that? You jump in through some other hoops then?
That's correct. Yep. This was before Nuxt content came out. And so I'm basically, I think I'm using some kind of YAML package, YAML markdown, gray matter, whatever it's called these days, to just read those static markdown files and then inject them into my Vuex store and read them from there.
Now, is that the markdown IT def list and footnote and sub? And
It uses that gray matter package to actually read like the YAML, but when it gets to the actual markdown, I use the markdown it package to parse the markdown. Yep.
Okay, I see. You got Vuify. So is this Bulma for the theming?
It is Bulma. Most of it's Bulma pretty out of the box.
Uh-huh.
Not a whole lot of customization there, but it made things move quickly for sure.
So what requires React?
Okay, interesting question for sure. So React is what Netlify CMS is built with. And so in order to interact with Netlify CMS, I had to add and install React for some very minimal interactions. I'm trying to think, the open source version actually, I'm really not sure, I can't remember why I would install React with the open source version. I know with the premium version, which hasn't been released yet, and I really needed to find time to work on it, but I had to install React in order to get site previews to work. So in Netlify CMS, you have your CMS window, like on the left-hand side, you have your inputs for content and things like that. But on the right-hand side, you can actually preview the site live. And so at least in the premium version, I had to basically take the input, the content that they're typing from Netlify CMS using some React code, pull it out of there and live put it inside the page itself so you can preview it.
In the past, when I've been looking at, you know, all the different CMSs, have the CMSs to use with Vue or Nuxt, I've looked at Netlify CMS. I haven't really played it. Can you talk about the CMS and how it works? If I understand correctly, it's basically committing, it's using static files, right? That's what your content is, and it's putting it inside a repo, and it handles all that for you, but gives you a UI for editing your content and modeling and so on.
That's correct. Yeah, that's the gist of it. The big plus for me, well, several things. One, the install is as easy as a script tag put on your page and then a YAML file that kind of defines what they call collections. So it defines kind of how your resources should look and what fields they should have. For instance, in the Awake template, there is a posts resource or a post collection. And in my YAML, there's a key for that. For posts, and I just have to describe what kind of fields posts take, such as author and, you know, post body or content or, you know, things like that. And so that's all defined in a static file. Like, it's not some WordPress type kind of thing where you actually have to get into PHP and add an input or something like that. It's just a YAML file. And so it's really nice to work with. So it installs with a simple script tag. The configuration is really simple. And as you said, it stores your content in markdown files. And this provides a couple different benefits. It means that your content is actually versioned with zero work on your part, right? If you've ever, you know, worked with content in a database and you want to do versioning, like, that's something you actually have to think about. But not so with Netlify CMS. It's just everything is stored in the Git repo. And so it's automatically versioned out of the box. You can roll back your content at any time. It also means, at least on Netlify's hosting, and I'm sure other hosting providers can do this as well, it means that I can add content into a separate branch, and I can actually have Netlify deploy that on a preview site, and I can kind of look at my content and have it edited or, you know, QA'd, and I'm not affecting my live site at all. And that's something, once again, that you barely even have to think about because it's all in Git. And the other part of that is, the other good part about having your content actually stored in Git is that you don't have to deal with a database. There's no, you know, there's just no other service to mess with. You don't have to worry about, you know, are my database connections correct? Is my database running? Is it available? All these different things you have to think about with a lot of typical stacks. And then probably the last thing that's really great about having the content be in the repo is especially for open source projects. This means people can contribute to your content in a way that they're used to. They can make a pull request, you know, to your repo and update help docs. If it's help docs, they can update, you know, blog post content, whatever it is you have in your content, right? And it just makes it really simple.
So with Netlify CMS, is there a URL that people can access on your website? Like they have to sign in order to make changes, or do you need the repo local and then you access a UI by running some command in NPM?
I gotcha. So you can just go to a URL in the browser, and that URL is completely customizable. It just depends on where you include the script tag. So for instance, on the Awake template, I have like in your typical Nuxt application, there's a pages directory, and then there is a admin.u file. And in that file, I have a link, script tag link to the Netlify CMS. And so it's completely customizable where you can access that. Now, if you want to run it on your local system, you can do that as well. Netlify actually provides a command, and I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but allows you to, so let me backtrack just a little. So anytime you hit save in Netlify CMS by default, whether you're on your local environment or whether you're on your live production environment, it's going to use the repo that it was set up with. And that's going to be your production repo. And so even if I'm on my local environment, localhost 3000/admin, and I make a change, it's actually going to change my content. It's going to make a commit in the repo, and that'll trigger a change in my live site. But there is also a little command that Netlify provides to where it won't actually make the commit to your actual repo. It'll just do a little local file change. And that makes local development really simple as well.
Okay. Yeah, that was going to be my next question, is whether or not it automatically made a change in a commit just for saving a change in the CMS, because that I could see that being sort of problematic.
Yep, for sure. And I believe you can also do, you can save as draft. So, you know, in your interface, you can hit save, or you can hit publish or save as draft, and the draft will just commit it to another branch. It will create a new branch for you and commit it there. So everything on my live site, everything on Awake Plus, or everything on Awake is based off of the master branch. Anything that's not in the master branch doesn't see the live site.
So if all of the saves are going back to GitHub, do all of your users need to have a GitHub account? I went to the admin login page for the Awake template, and I see login with Netlify identity, which is also an excellent service by Netlify. Does that account need to be tied in with GitHub in order to work? Or can I, for example, give this to a client who knows nothing about GitHub and just let them have at it?
You can give it to a client and let them have at it.
Okay, I'm sold.
it's really great. And this is, you know, I, of course, they take no credit for this whatsoever. This is all Netlify, and Netlify CMS is, it's just an amazing thing. The user that is in Netlify and has the Netlify account and the hosting and all that, they have to have the GitHub account. But just to be a user in the CMS itself, no, you do not have to have a GitHub account.
Is it tied specifically to GitHub, or could you use GitLab or Bitbucket or another source code provider?
I believe they support others as well. GitHub has the most options available, but they do support GitLab and Bitbucket as well.
So just to recap in my mind, because I'm coming at this from, I have a client who needs a website and they need to be able to add and manipulate the content themselves. I am a Vue developer. I like working in Vue. I don't want to have to think about servers and database. So I will create a Nuxt site. I can integrate Netlify identity and give access to the client so that they can manipulate all of the data. And from their perspective, all they're doing is signing into their site and changing their content. And that it just works at that point. I mean, obviously exactly all the work right. has to be done on the developer side, but it just works.
It's a beautiful thing, yeah.
That is amazing.
Okay, so now you said the CMS is script tag. So they can access, the CMS is really hosted on Netlify then, the UI, and how does that work? It's not like, I thought you were installing it on your local machine, unless I totally misunderstood that.
It is. It's the script tag. I believe it's, you know, I think it's a link from a CDN somewhere, but it's all in JavaScript, and the JavaScript through Netlify identity. I'm a little hazy on how the Netlify identity stuff works. Auth is kind of a black box to me in a lot of ways.
You and many other people.
Yeah. So yeah, it speaks directly from JavaScript through the identity to your GitHub repo. So
excellent.
Are you stuck in your software development career, trying to figure out how to move to the next stage? Let me help. I'm starting a program to help developers move up in their careers using proven techniques and by starting a podcast in order to advance. Right now, I'm only scheduling calls to see where you're at, where you want to go, and how we can get you there. There's no sales involved, and you can schedule that call at devchat.tv/next level.
So how is it in terms of content editing itself? And the reason I ask this is that in terms of like a WYSIWYG or rich text editing or stuff like that, because it's all in Markdown, but I know there are Markdown editors. And the reason I ask is that I've been using another CMS, and I won't name them here. I've used it on our previous project, and I was tempting to use them for another next project blog. And one of the important parts of this one is that I would be using a lot of block quoting because I'm writing about, you know, things that other people have written and so on. And the editor does not support a block quote. I think the block quote has been around since approximately Tim Berners-Lee era. I could be wrong. It's been around for a long time. But their text editor didn't support it. And you have to jump through all kinds of hoops just to use it. Couldn't believe it. So anyway, just from a general standpoint, how is the content editing experience in Netlify?
I don't think it's grade A. I think it's good though. It's very good. There's a little work to be done UI wise, especially when it comes to, one of the things I've been trying to do when I have the time in the premium version of the template is to really kind of make it not just kind of like an editor, but even a page builder to where you can, you know, add things like buttons and columns and things like that. And when you get into that, it gets kind of tricky and the UI is not great. But especially just for like, you know, a blog post where you're writing text with headings and, you know, block quotes and paragraphs and things like that, it's pretty well done. Like I said, I wouldn't call it top notch, grade A, but it gets the job done and it works well. It's interfaces that clients are probably used to, right? It's your typical kind of like WordPress looking WYSIWYG editor and, you know, normal text fields and things like that for other inputs. But you can also even, their WYSIWYG editor provides a toggle to be able to edit the Markdown directly as well, which is really handy for me as a developer. I like to be able to do that sometimes.
Is the Netlify CMS interface extensible so that you could customize it to be able to be like, add a button here, or add a thing here, whatever special components you have? Obviously, it wouldn't be able to render the view as easily if it's built using React, but maybe there's some flexibility in there.
There is some flexibility. You can add new input types. I think they call them widgets. And so like for your post title, when you're setting up your YAML that I mentioned earlier to kind of configure what your different collections look like. For instance, in Awake, the title is just a text field, but I could create a custom widget type and it could be, you know, title text. And maybe that includes some kind of, some kind of special UI just for the title, right? So you can customize that. You can also customize not only widgets, but what they call editor components, I believe. And that is components that are actually nested inside of your WYSIWYG editor. So you can do text and all that stuff, but you can also, inside the WYSIWYG editor, kind of comes up like a little collapsible box that when you open it up, it has whatever you want in it. And so inside your WYSIWYG, you can nest these other widgets inside of your content, and you can create as many of those customs as you want. It's a little finicky in my experience, and maybe I'm just not the best at regex because it uses regex a lot to kind of pull out what is a widget from your Markdown. But it's very flexible.
Okay, so it's good to know, because obviously, not every client needs just the basic WordPress, like just normal input. It'd be good to be able to make changes as needed.
Yep, absolutely.
Cool. Speaking of extensions, let's move on from Netlify CMS. In your talk, you were discussing some of the extensions to Nuxt to make a fully fledged blogging site, some of the ones that you were using. Would you mind talking about some of that?
Yes. One of the modules I used was a wrapper around an image optimization plugin. And that was really handy. So all my images are stored in the GitHub repo. And what I do at build time is take those images, and the module does it for me. I really don't even have to think about it. They are generated at different sizes, and source sets are automatically created. And so that all my images on the site are fully optimized. There's a catch there. It does mean that my build times can build up unnecessarily, because I really haven't found a way yet to make sure I'm only rebuilding new things. It rebuilds the entire site every time, and so I'm regenerating those optimized images every time. But it means that I can have a good user experience on the end with optimized images. I'm also using a view library from a fellow named Marcus, and I don't think I'm going to attempt his last name because I'll butcher it, but it's a really great library. And what it allows me to do is it allows me to only hydrate certain pieces in Nux. And so that helps to speed up page load times as well. So by default, Nux just rehydrates everything. So JavaScript is injected into the page and provides that behavior on the client side. But a lot of things like static content don't need that, right? And so it's just some unneeded overhead to include the JavaScript for that on the client side when it's not needed. And so what this library allows me to do, it allows me to wrap certain pieces of my code, just basically elements. It's a view component, right? So it allows me to wrap certain elements in a lazy hydrate tag. And I can say hydrate never, or I can say, hydrate only when it's in view in the viewport. I can say hydrated on this specific event or whatever. And it just allows me to only load in JavaScript when it's necessary. And that was one of my big goals with this build, was to make it as optimized as possible in terms of speed.
What was the name of the library for that Marcus wrote?
It's called Lazy Hydrate.
Lazy Hydrate. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that Oberliner or something like that?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I tried to pronounce his name at the conference itself, and I'm afraid I butchered it, so I didn't want to attempt again.
Oberliner, I'm guessing, if he's German. Yeah. Okay.
Is that a Nux specific component, or is that for Vue in general?
It's for Vue in general.
Okay.
Yeah. I've got up my package.json now, kind of running through it, see what else is going on there. So also used just a Vue component called Vue Discuss, and that powers the component or the comments section.
Yeah, I've used that myself too. It's just a nice little wrap around the Discuss JavaScript library, I think.
Yep. Super simple. Super simple. Let's see. Yeah. I think those are probably the highlights there.
Yeah, one of my favorite things about Nuxt in general is just how much you can extend it and tweak it to make it exactly how you need.
Absolutely. And there's really even a lot of things that have been put out by community members and the Nuxt teams, team themselves, since I initially created the Awake template a year and a half ago, whatever it was. And there's a lot of things on here that could be accomplished with pre-built packages.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you. Are there any other points that you would like to discuss as far as either developing Awake or using Nuxt in general? Just any tips that you'd like to share?
I think probably one tip for using Nuxt is always be aware of your context, because especially coming from the PHP background, it can be a little confusing sometimes what's happening on the server side, or in my case, in the in the build part of things, and what's happening in the client itself. And because you're working in JavaScript the entire time, you really just got to make sure you're aware of the context you're in when you're doing things, because sometimes things like window aren't available, and of course you try to avoid that anyway. But then there are times where maybe you've got some kind of API key or something that you're needing to use. You need to make sure that's not available in the client, but it just happened at the build time. So that's one thing that I've stumbled across that can be a little tricky. Also, I think just otherwise working with Nuxt is a pleasure. It's Vue, so it makes me happy.
So I got a question for you guys, and this is something I've been thinking about. You know, I came from, you know, my PhD experience started in the Drupal world. And one of the things I thought about, you know, when I'm going through and building a Vue, you know, an app or a Nuxt site or, you know, whatever particular project is as a more of a back-end person who's trying to learn, you know, the front end in terms of theming and getting it to look right, your CSS and HTML and grid and Flexbox and so on and so forth. One of the nice things that Drupal has and that WordPress has and even Gatsby has, although I think it's maybe a little different, is the concept of themes. Hugo has the same thing. I was playing around with Hugo a couple weeks ago, you know, trying to maybe looking at a different tool just that was real simple. And it's got themes that you can download and plug in, and it handles all of your display for you. So I know in, you know, with Vue, with your single file contents where you have your CSS and your JavaScript and your HTML all in one file, at least that's how most people do it, I believe. It might be a little more difficult, but to me, that would be just a huge, huge addition to be able to have some sort of separate themes, you know, that you could just download and plug into a Nuxt site or a Vue site. What are your guys' thoughts on that? Is that something you've thought about before, or am I the only one who's been thinking about that?
I think it sounds great. I think, you know, obviously you gotta have some standards there around what your, you know, what your markup looks like and things like that. But I think it's certainly doable. I'm trying to think if there's anything out in the Nuxt world right now that that kind of handles some of that. I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
I can't either. And I've looked around.
I can't either.
I've looked around. You know, if you Google something like Nuxt themes, you'll come up with Awake for one. There's maybe two, you know, a couple other ones, but generally the way they are packaged as is as an entire Nuxt install with your design elements incorporated into it instead of just, you know, the default Nuxt that comes with the main page and the empty about page. So I'm sure there's a lot of people out there going, great, Steve, if you want to lead the charge, go for it. Patch is welcome. You know, trust me, I'd love to do that. But I'm just curious. It's just something I've thought about a lot. And like I said, you see it in a number of other tools, whether they're full-on CMSs or just front ends, like, you know, something like Hugo. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's others out there that have, you know, pluggable themes as well. But anyway.
I wish I could remember the site name. But I know I've seen at least one provider that they've built several different quote unquote themes, you know, basically the appearance of the site, but they've ported them into several different static site generators, you know, things like Nuxt and
oh really?
Yeah.
Let me know about that when you find out.
Okay, for sure. I'll have to look that up and shoot it to you for sure. Because it looks interesting. You could very quickly, I think, change between, you know, the kind of site generator you want without changing the look of your site.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot. I mean, anytime you're using a site generator, there's a lot going on underneath, you know, that people don't see. Your language, are you using Ruby? Are you using Nuxt, Vue, you know, whatever on your back end? So that might be a little harder. I know I was just looking at the Gatsby page for Gatsby themes, and there's a lot of configuration that they wrap up in there as well, and not just necessarily display elements. But yeah, it seems to me you could do some sort of, you know, have some sort of external files for your content and then have a way to import them into your single file components. Or I'm sure there's a way. I know one thing I hear a lot of people talk about, and this sort of falls along the same lines that would be nice in browsers, is HTML includes. I know I heard on Syntax they've mentioned that here recently.
I like that.
Well, so yeah, that's sort of the same idea, you know, where you have one, if you have an HTML header and you're just in an HTML site and you want to use that header as it is now, you just got to, unless you're using PHP or some sort of other language to import it, you can't just include it. And that's something that people have wanted. And this sort of seems along the same lines, considering how the single file components are structured. But
now anyway. when you're saying a theme, Steve, are you meaning like, I'm trying to imagine WordPress where I can go into a config panel and say I want 2-column layout or 3-column layout. Are you wanting that level or more like...
No, not necessarily
I'm using my basic structure has a hero image and then some blog posts and then a footer. And then I can just switch out how that entire thing looks and potentially functions. So not just CSS, but JavaScript as well. But it keeps that same basic layout of hero, blog posts, footer.
No, not necessarily a drag and drop where you can structure, because that's a lot of work. Drupal used to use it. It's called it was called Panels when it first came in back in Drupal 5. And now they use something called Form Builder in Drupal 8. And that's a lot of work. That's a lot of complexity. I'm thinking more of a pre-built design, you know, like, you know, for Awake, you know, that's got a whole pre-built design with the, you know, it's got the header across the top and you got your six elements or however many you've got in your CMS on the front. You know, you've got your specific colors and layout and fonts and, you know, all the design elements that you can just plug in and then plug your content into those elements or, you know, obviously then tweak it to however you want. So not so much, you know, a WYSIWYG type drag and drop. I want this element here and here. It's already pre-built for you, but you can just plug it in and then just plug in your data.
Got it. That seems very interesting. We'll have to explore and see if anyone's done that.
Yeah. To me, it seems like a cool idea. I just have to figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's my contribution for the day.
Awesome.
So you mentioned HTML includes, and that just that sparked in my head. Did either one of you use, I think it was called CodeKit back in the day. Do you remember that?
CodeKit. No, that's not ringing a bell.
It was like a GUI for like a build stage of stuff. So essentially you have your build tools like, you know, SAS compilation and JavaScript bundling and things like that. So CodeKit before NPM was probably still popular back then too, but I didn't use it. CodeKit allowed you to kind of do those things in a user interface. And one of the things that allowed you to do was provide these special HTML comments that were essentially includes, but it, you know, at build time, it would concatenate the files together or whatever. That just reminded me of that. Yeah. We do all the same kind of things just using, you know, the terminal and build tools now, but
Webpack, yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Just a little nostalgia.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Daniel. This has been excellent.
Or as Bill and Ted would say, excellent.
Excellent.
And I'm going to have to go and try out Netlify CMS now. Cause
yeah, me too.
That sounds exactly like what I was wanting.
Definitely do. The one thing I would say is using Nux content and just writing plain old Markdown in my IDE as a developer is even more pleasurable to me than necessarily Netlify CMS. But if you want, you know, if you want this thing accessible by a client, someone who is non-tech, you know, savvy, Netlify CMS is definitely the way to go.
Yeah, up until now, I've been having my client use forestry.io for the same benefit of it being Markdown and writes back to GitHub. But if it could just be as part of the site, I feel like that would be a lot more pleasant to use for the client.
You know, I really wish that there was a Vue powered Netlify CMS. Like, I wish there was a counterpart to Netlify CMS that did all the same things Netlify CMS did, but their code base was Vue, and interacting with it, I wouldn't have to do some kind of weird things to like make React talk to Vue. That'd be really cool. Yeah. If somebody was out there, if you're looking for an idea, build Netlify CMS with Vue. I'll give you a hug.
All right, we've got two new project ideas: the Nux themes and a Netlify CMS competitor using Vue. Anyone wants to do it, let us know. Awesome.
Hey, folks, if you love this podcast and would like to support the show, or if you wish you could listen without the sponsorship messages, then you're in luck. We're setting up new premium podcast feeds where you can get all of the episodes released after Christmas 2020 without the ads. Signing up will help us pay for editing and production, and you can go sign up at devchat.tv/premium.
At this point, we'll move into picks. Picks are the part of the show where we share things with you that we like. They don't need to be tech related, just think they are pretty great. So we will start with Steve. Steve, do you have a pick for us today?
Sure. I'll go with the funny this week. So earlier this week, I was listening to another sort of well-known tech podcasts, and the phrase nerd stomping came up. And it basically means, the way they were talking about it is, you know, you're focused on some topic and some other topic will come up and someone will bring it up because they know it really interests you or it's really interesting. And so you get totally distracted. And that's what you're working on because, you know, it's just all enveloping. And that reminded me of, I think, probably my first or second favorite XKCD comic called Nerd Sniping. It's XKCD number 356. I'll put the link. And I'm especially one for the physical type of humor. So this one is always cracks me up every time I read it. So anyway, I'll put the link in there, but yeah, XKCD number 356.
Awesome. Huge fan of XKCD. Daniel, I will let you go last, so I will go next. I have two picks today, I think. I had to. Where'd it go? I guess I just have one. So I have been on the side for fun. I've been exploring mobile game development and trying to figure out the best way to do that. I recently purchased an iPhone 12 mini, so I'm finally on the Apple side of things. I inherited an old iMac, and I was like, hey, I want to write games. And what's the best way to do this? And then after doing some research, I've found, I don't know if this is the best way yet, but it is a way and I'm enjoying it. A game engine called Flame is at flameengine.org.
So if you're creating RPGs or single person shooters, that gives new definition to the meaning Flame Wars, doesn't it?
There you go, Flame Wars. So the Flame Engine is built using... I liked it, Steve.
Thumbs up.
The Flame Engine is built using Flutter. So you're using the Dart language and the Flutter mobile framework to develop the game. For those who aren't aware, Flutter is basically using a 2D canvas to paint components on anyway. So it's not a huge stretch to, instead of painting mobile app components like tables and dropdowns and whatever, to just painting graphics that you can interact with. So the Flame Engine gives you all of that functionality. And then I have been following a tutorial, and I will put the link in as well, for making mobile games using Flutter and Flame. And it walks you through the basics of getting set up with Flutter, creating your first basic interaction with Flame. And then I'm on part two right now, and we're building a game where you're squashing flies with your finger. So you've rendered the graphic, it's animating. There's background. Looks like later you're going to get into different types of enemies, so it'll generate different stuff. It's an object-oriented language. If you haven't used Dart, Dart is a great language. If you're comfortable with JavaScript, you'll be comfortable with it. If you're comfortable with C# or Java, you'll probably be comfortable with it too. It takes a lot of inspiration from current languages that are out there to make something that's accessible to a number of developers. So if you want to explore game development, I recommend checking that out. Daniel, what is your pick today?
I think pick number one for me is going to be completely non-developer related, but I've really enjoyed the Libby app for quite a little while now since this whole COVID thing really started. It's been a really great way to go to the library without going to the library. I'll put a link in here. So for those who are unfamiliar with it, if you have a library card, at least in my location, I can download the Libby app, put in my library card number, and I can check out books right on my phone. Some of them you read, you know, on the screen. Some of them are audiobooks, and so they're really great for going on a run or walking the dog or, you know, working in the basement. Just have a audiobook going while I'm doing life, and it's been really great. It's completely free, and I've been listening to a lot of Preston Child Lincoln Child and Preston Scott, I believe is his name. It's a series called the Pendergast novels, and it's murder mysteries. They're really great. And of course, you can listen to fiction, nonfiction, just about anything you can get at a library, you can find on here. It's been a lot of fun. I guess I have to probably say something developer friendly as well. And so my next pick, and it's just not just because it's developer friendly, but it's really a thing that's helped sped up a lot of my Vue development. And that is a library called Vue Formulate. And Vue Formulate is just a way to do form fields and forms in Vue. One of the things I really like about it is it standardizes the way you interact with inputs. So the browser native select is nothing like, you know, an input. It's a totally different tag. It has options that you nest inside of it, right? So it looks nothing like a regular input, but with Vue Formulate, all inputs have essentially the same API that you're interacting with. A select is no longer a select with options nested inside of it. It's just another formulate input with the tech, with the type of text, or excuse me, with the type of select. And so it really standardizes the way the API for inputs. And I really enjoyed that. What that also allowed them to do was be able to define forms in a essentially in a JSON object. And so you can just provide to a view formulate form, you can provide a JSON object that describes all your fields, and boom, you got the entire form. You don't have to write any markup for it. And this is really cool for writing generated forms in some kind of UI environment. You could just spit out the JSON to your view template and stick it into the view formulate component, and there you go, it builds out the whole form for you. So that's really cool.
We actually had Justin Schroeder, the creator of view formulate, back in I don't see the date, 3 months ago apparently, on episode 120. We'll make sure there's a link for that as well if you want to hear more about the development of view formulate.
Oh yeah, I remember that now. Okay, yeah,
that was a fun one. Awesome, thank you so much, Daniel. And where can people find you so that they can either learn about what you're doing or follow up on what we've talked about today?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at DanielKelly_IO, or on GitHub, DanielKelly.io, or my personal website, DanielKelly.io. Hit me up any of those places and you'll be sure to find links from the Awake, or for the Awake template, and all those different places as well. And yeah, if you end up using the Awake template, give me a shout out. Let me see what you're building. I've really loved to see what people are using it for so far.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lindsay. Yeah. And Steve.
My pleasure.
And if you enjoyed this episode, you can find more of them at viewsonview.com or at devchat.tv. You can find us on Twitter at viewsonview, or you can find myself on Twitter at Lindsay K. Wardell, or Steve at Wonder95. Hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll see you again next week. Bye.
Adios.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.